The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Strangers are like, oh, you've probably heard this story a million times. I'm like, actually, no, I've never heard him say this, because if I ask them these questions on the couch, I'm like, oh, shit, Christopher, I can't remember. I don't know, shit. But then when there's a crowd around,
he
all of a sudden.
He comes alive in the phone.
He comes alive. Oh, yeah, if there's a microphone or a crowd, his memory gets a lot better. Whoa, okay. That was the wrong day to play that opening, because my dad can hear that right now, all right? But it is the Unbuttoned Podcast. We're here. It's Wednesday. It's week 5 deep dive into the film session. We're going to hit a bunch of stuff today, okay? We got some Twitter questions, some Ask Me Anything stuff that we're going to go into. Browns, 49ers, full game. Raiders, Bears, full game. Texans overs, Falcons D. Vikings overs, Giants D. Ravens overs, Steelers D. Chargers overs, Broncos D. That's all the things we're going to hit on in this deep dive session. And, of course, a little news. Dad, you there, right? You're on. You hear me, Dad?
Yeah, I'm hearing you. I'm hearing the shot you took at me. I didn't know you do. You opened your show up by just crushing my ass, but that's okay.
Well, I think I crushed your ass after you got off the phone last week when I said that, because I just was explaining that sometimes the best stories I hear from you are when there's a crowd around. So.
Oh, yeah, that's me. I got to have an audience, my ass. I mean, here you got me cursing already.
Good.
Yeah, so,
All right, so, hey, the big news, okay, in the NFL right now, handshake gate, right? You know,
oh,
Baker.
Oh, yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, okay. All right.
All over TV, all morning I saw you. Every channel's covering it.
Yes, I know.
On and on.
Well, at least we have this. At least Richard Sherman has admitted wrongdoing. So that's at least a start. I like to see that.
He says he's going to text or tweet or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Baker Mayfield to kind of, I don't know if he'll apologize, but you know what it'll do? It was probably good for both of them. So
why do you say that?
Well, I think it'll teach Baker just a lesson on how maybe the league is looking at him and players.
Right.
And you and I know, and you talk about it all the time, don't become a marked man in the NFL.
Yeah.
And there's many ways you can become it, especially as a quarterback, more than any other position. And so I think he's going to learn something, even though he did nothing wrong. He's going to learn something from that, knowing how, teams get up to play against the Browns and Baker Mayfield.
Yes.
Because it was rubbed in their face all offseason by people like us.
Right.
And everybody else. And then for Richard Sherman, too. You know?
Yeah.
You know, Richard Sherman's in the twilight of his career. He plays, a special way. And he can be a leader and all these things that you want to really help your football team. He gives your team a little personality.
Right.
So I think he learned something, too, also.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was wrong on Richard Sherman's part. I did say this, and I don't know if you agree with it. I do. I mean, you're right. All your points you made about the Browns, Baker Mayfield, all that. There was a time where there was an unwritten rule in the NFL where, like, quarterbacks didn't do national commercials until they won playoff games and things like that.
You know, you said that, and you are right.
Yeah, I mean, right? I mean, I'm not wrong to think that, right?
Like, No, you're not.
Yeah, I mean, you would have never done a commercial. Nobody offered me one anyways, but I knew just from your career to not do one until you'd really done something and made your stamp on the game.
Well, that's a great thing to say. I think there is some truth to it. It was, but you know, nowadays guys come into the league, and early if they have success, whatever, it's probably going to be the height of their popularity.
Right.
Unless they go to the, win Super Bowls,
Right.
After Super Bowl. And, what do we hear for 5 months straight? The draft. He's great.
Right.
And if you come in the league like Baker, and there's many guys have a little success. We saw Mahomes his first year playing.
Yep.
He's on commercials too. All those endorsements come because, hey man, that group of people we love that, the whatever they call it, that young age group from 24 to 38, they relate to them.
Yes.
So that's where it all goes to.
They're called millennials, yes.
Well, they're millennials, but there's another group, that focus group, you know, whatever TV talks about. The most important group is, hey, who cares? If they're watching, they're watching. I don't care how old they are or whatever. That's the way I look at it.
Okay. Well, you had your own handshake gate. I got to mention that just before
you
move on. Well, you and Ronnie Lott. It was a post-game handshake gate.
Yeah, I don't think we shook hands, though.
Yeah, well, you were supposed to shake hands, and you didn't.
Yeah, okay. What about it?
Well, I just think it's funny.
It is funny. It was. And, you know, you look back and listen.
Well,
you know how it is, and I'm not.
Well, let me give the background first for everybody that doesn't know the story. It's 1990. You're 10-1. The San Francisco 49ers are 10-1. You're going to play there on Monday Night Football. You guys lose a brutal, tough, physical football game, 7-3, where, I don't know, you had the ball, what, inside the 10 with under a minute left maybe somewhere?
No, I think there was more than that.
A little more than that? Yeah.
I remember sitting out there going, we should kick the field goal.
Right.
And try to win the game later, but we didn't, so whatever, and it didn't work.
Okay, and then you and Ronnie Lott get into it after the game. Now, my understanding is always, because you had Jim Burt on your defense with the New York Giants all those years, he went to the San Francisco 49ers and said some things to that defense to fire them up that you didn't feel like was necessarily true to what you've said about their defense, and that's what started it between
right.
you and
well,
Ronnie
Well, that's
Lott?
Part of it. I think there was probably a little history there to begin with before that.
Right.
Even though we played many times against each other, it seems like we played the 49ers out in San Francisco every year on Monday night.
Right.
But that's just the way it felt. Jim, you know, I was kidding or getting on Jim this summer at the All-Star game in New Jersey. I think about that, and I don't know if he denies it or not, but, you know, I played with him for many years. He still lives here close to us. And it would be like Jim to stir some trouble up. That's who he was.
Yes, that's it. That's right. He coached me on Little League Baseball, and he liked to even stir the pot in Little League Baseball. So I'm sure he did in the NFL.
Listen, yes, he coached high school football for a while. He almost beat up the other coach in every game, you know, whatever, players. And,
right.
So, hey, look, that's all those things. It is what it is. I was mad about it at first, but of course, like everything, as time goes by, you just realize it means a big fat nothing, and you just move on.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into it. All right.
Let's go. I hope I can hang there with you. I did. Listen, just to let the audience know.
Yes. Right.
You did send me your notes.
Right.
And I got to tell you, they're almost worthless because I can't read them. Could you write just a little smaller?
I know. Well, it's my cursive handwriting. It's perfect cursive handwriting, but you will need some glasses.
Wait, what do you mean perfect? My butt. how can it be perfect if I can't tell? Let's see. Amari. I'm only know it's Amari because at least you made a capital A.
Okay.
you got to go through seven words and go, I think that, ooh.
All right. Well,
he is wide open, and Amari should catch.
Yes, the first interception that bounced off.
Stubbs
him.
First?
Yeah, he stubs his feet, I think.
Oh, he stubbed his feet. Okay.
Right. Yes, right.
Oh, that's feet?
Yeah, it might have been.
God, okay. hey, I can watch the tape and make my own notes before I can read these. So I just want everybody to know that. Okay, go
all
ahead.
All right. So, yeah, all right. So I'll read some of my notes that jump out to me. You comment off of it, and certainly I know you'll have your take on the game, even if you didn't, you know, get to watch the film.
Well, yeah, I haven't
like
had a, you know, today's my big day. I told you where I watch games today and tomorrow, and I really catch up. On Mondays, just to let the audience know what I do on Mondays is I watch whatever I think is going to be important for the Showtime show, which we film on Tuesday. So I'll get a lot of things together and ready for that.
Yes,
It does take a long time. And that's the – I did an interview this past week about being in the studio to cover all the games because I don't want to go, well, you know, on third down, they're 3-7 today. Who gives a crap?
Right.
Why are they 3-7? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, you know, you got to get better on third and through third. You got to get better on third down. Hey, no kidding. We'd like to, but we stink. The other team is good. I mean, those are the things – I'm making it very simple, but you know what I mean, and
yep.
I hope the people out there listening to you, if they do listen to your podcast, sorry about that, son.
That's all right. People tell me they do listen, so that's all right.
They do listen, I know. So, you know, to understand that. Stats are great, but explain the stat to me and why it's important or why it is the way it is.
Yeah,
so,
I hear you.
Okay, go.
All right, so let's go there. The Browns offense for the 49ers defense. All right,
right.
So here's the first thing. I'll just say this just as a side note. Hey, the first play of the game, OBJ probably did have the deep guy if he wanted to throw it. Might have been 6 points. Either way, it was a great throw to Jarvis Landry. But here would be my take of the game just in general. If we just had to break down the Browns offense versus the 49ers defense. First off, yeah, they were playing from behind from the get-go because the 49ers offense kind of put it on them early. That probably took them out of their game plan to a degree. But I guess what I would say more than anything, the Browns got whooped up front by a really awesome front seven of the San Francisco 49ers. It is for real from that aspect. I was a little disappointed that I didn't see more variety in the Browns run game as compared to last week. We saw pulling guards, a lot of different things like that schematically in the run game. I thought this week, okay, it was inside zone, very just simple blocking, okay? I didn't love that aspect of it. But I think the big thing is Baker Mayfield getting off to the shaky start he did is really the big takeaway from the football game in general. Yeah, the pass protection wasn't great, but him throwing an out route early in the game to Odell Beckham Jr.
Wide open.
Right. Yep. Right. Wide open. I mean, it shouldn't even be a ball that OBJ has to adjust to. So that is huge. I mean, that's a first down left on the field. But getting away from all that, dumb interception to Richard Sherman, okay? There they are. It's 14-3, and they're driving in the second quarter. And here they are in the red zone, and they got a third and goal from the 6 or 7 yard line.
Right.
Right? And he throws a horrible ball that should have been just an absolute walk-in touchdown
walk-in.
To Antonio
Callaway, right? I think, right?
Exactly right. Antonio Callaway throws a rocket ball at his, you know, at his knees and behind him at the same time. Callaway does his best to try to catch it, but within doing that, he knocks the ball up in the air, interception, and pretty much game over.
Right. Well, a couple things just to start with.
Yeah.
When you're playing the 49ers in that defense and you're playing against Richard Sherman, think of him like Aqib Talib in a way. He's not in. I think Aqib Talib is a better corner right now, but they play the exact same style. They put their rear ends to the sideline.
Yep.
They watch the quarterback. They're going to be somewhat conservative, and they're going to let you throw outcuts.
Right.
And I didn't see enough of that from the Cleveland offense. So during the game, I'm going, damn, throw the outcut. Do it again.
Right.
And Baker was overthrowing the football.
Yes.
Trying to throw it too hard.
He has been since our preseason game number 3, where I remember you first pointed it out to me when they played the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's been overthrowing it since that point.
Yeah, I don't understand why, because he has plenty of arm strength.
Right.
And there is. Listen, it's something he's doing. He's striding long, and when you do that, so your foot is behind you, your right hip goes in, your elbow goes down, the ball goes high. It's science. That's why, really, that is the reason why. And he did that. He did it a couple times in the game. He's done it probably about 6 or 7 times this year, where it's really resulted in some bad plays because of that.
Yes, right.
And then the play that he threw to Callaway was just the opposite. He stopped everything and just kind of gave it a quick jerk, and he fell forward a little, and so the ball is going to go low. And it's not that it's just low, but it gets there so quick, like you said,
yes.
And the receiver couldn't fall down and catch it underneath him.
Right.
So, you know, Baker, I thought, got off to the interception. You're right. It was terrible.
The fumble,
yes. Again, man, reckless with the ball. In today's NFL, just got done watching Aaron Rodgers play the Cowboys.
Yeah.
And look, he really made something out of a lot of nothings.
Right.
One, throwing the ball away,
yep.
Getting rid of the football, moving when he had to. But I'll tell you one thing, he had those big grippers on that football the whole time he was moving, because he knows you never know where they're coming from, especially when you play the Cowboys.
Right.
So Baker Mayfield, careless with the ball, never got settled in the pocket, and just didn't relax and let the ball go. Like you said, overthrowing, which led to terrible mistakes. And again, the offense became like the offense I saw against the Los Angeles Rams.
Right.
Let's get in the shotgun. No diversity. Not enough deception. All that thing. It's a word I overuse, but damn, is it true.
Yeah. No, it is. It's true.
It's true.
And it was. It was
there
true.
I am watching. I know you've already talked about it, but I watch Green Bay, and I just go, oh, national media, let's go. Let's talk about it. How does Aaron Rodgers like Matt LaFleur now? Will it work out? Do you think he's happy? Oh, you're going to keep guys in to protect me so I can rip one 50 yards down the field? Oh, a screen play that runs for a touchdown or whatever. Run the ball, everything. And listen, that offense, not to go back on you,
yeah.
But that offense, the evolution of what Green Bay is doing now, really was one of the big reasons why they won that game down in Dallas.
Definitely.
So, you know, it's just, I loved it. Everybody goes so crazy over everything, and it's when Aaron Rodgers said something about checking off at the line of scrimmage, oh my gosh, national alert. Aaron Rodgers and the coach won't get along.
Yeah, so. No, they got to go.
Okay, but go ahead.
It's a good formula. You're good. Don't worry. You're allowed to go wherever you want with the conversation. All right, so let's just button up that side of the ball. First off, I think we said it. For the 49ers defense is special. The front seven special. Their front four can come at you in waves, and they have a unique front four with two really impressive guys on the edge. Nick Bosa was phenomenal. Not only is he explosive off the football, but he's like a seasoned veteran with his moves and the way he uses his hands, and that's because he comes from a family of pass rushers, so he's well-schooled in that department. And I'll say this much, too, just to end this whole Cleveland conversation on the offensive side of the ball. The things that I worried about, and I think you worried about these too, when Baker Mayfield was coming out of college and like games where we saw the Georgia game, Final Four, and all that, they're rearing their ugly head a little bit here at me. I didn't know they didn't rear their head last year, but
why didn't they show up last year? Explain why.
Well, I guess last year because they ran the ball really well.
Oh,
yes, right.
He was under center, getting deep on play action passes.
Definitely.
Oh, what a unique concept. Okay.
I know, and they did it all last week against Baltimore. And I don't want to blame Freddie Kitchens totally in this game because I think his defense and just the way of the game, it got away from them, their game plan all together.
That's true.
So there is some aspect of it there. But Baker Mayfield, yes, careless with the football, was not good in the pocket once again, and batted balls and some key third downs, and by the time you look up and do that, all of a sudden you're down 28-3 and the game's fucking over, and that's all there is to it, really, for that side of the ball. I don't know if there's really any other angle other than that, but that 49ers...
Well, I think the other angle is just that I watched the game, and, you know, to watch him, it's really the first time I've seen the 49ers live on TV. I've been watch them on tape and all that, but Armstead, you know, all the guys you talk about,
DeForest Buckner, right.
But Bosa, just to see him in person and to watch him work, and you're right, he's like a seasoned veteran. Of course, between his brother and his father working with him his whole life is going to make him, you know, make him be where he is. But really impressive, and I don't know. If you're Cleveland, last thing about it, you go out there, you know this front four is real.
Right.
You know what they are. So that even gives me, that even makes me more, like, not upset, but just perplexed. Why wasn't it a little more, when you play front fours like that, you better have a lot of wrinkles to your offense.
Right.
How are you going to slow them down? And just to go back, Green Bay had a lot of wrinkles.
Yeah.
Formations, movement.
Bootlegs, screens, all those things. Yes.
Everything to try to slow it. It doesn't slow Dallas down, but you could at least try.
Right.
But so they didn't do that. And I will say it, San Francisco, one of the best teams I've ever looked at in my life in the NFL when I did games for how many years. I don't know how many I did it, but a long time.
Yeah.
I remember the Super Bowl year they went to play Baltimore. The Harbaugh brothers played each other.
Right.
And I went to the 49ers practice, and I just went, oh, my God.
Yeah, and it was one
goes,
beast after another.
What's that?
It was one beast after another when you looked at their
team. I couldn't get over looking at them. This is the greatest-looking team I've ever seen in uniforms in practice.
Yeah.
And, you know, the practice was phenomenal. I mean, it was phenomenal. It was, like, real and everything. Harbaugh ran a great practice. They were kind of physical, you know, Kaepernick's throwing the ball great, and I'm just going, oh, there's no way Baltimore can beat this offense and this football team just because of the way they looked. And my point being, the 49ers, I'm not saying that about this year's team, but, man, do they look good standing on the field. And you know, I say that all the time, and people go, what does that mean? Well, usually when you look good and your whole team looks good, there's a personality. It means you're physical. Everybody's in great shape and they're ready to go. And size and power is still a big and maybe the number one thing in the NFL.
Yeah, definitely. They have a rare combination of size and power with the speed guys at the right position there.
They
on the
do.
Defense.
Wide receivers, running backs. My God, you know, Kyle's got to run the ball 30 times a game or 40 to keep the running backs happy.
Yeah.
Because whoever gets it, I'm like, who was that? Oh, God, he's good too.
Well, let's go. Let's go to that side of the ball. 49ers versus Browns D. I mean, right there. I mean, I think that's the thing that jumps out to me more than anything, okay? It is the run game, okay? I would say that the 49ers run game, Kyle Shanahan, is the best run game game designer in football right now with game plan specific runs, let alone his base inside outside zone runs in general. And that's really where they separate themselves. I don't know if you agree with that comment. I definitely do. Right?
You know, it's amazing how many times a running back runs off tackle, whatever, and, you know, nobody touches them for the first 10 yards. And I think maybe even Monday Night Football, did they have a stat that their running backs for the game or something, how far they were running past the line of scrimmage before they were touched? And it was pretty incredible, but not surprising. I've seen it from Kyle Shanahan. And, of course, I saw it firsthand 25 years ago or whatever it was with Mike Shanahan.
Yeah, of course, right.
I mean, and Terrell Davis, I lived through those days, and, you know, it was really – it was cutting edge at the time, and all the play actions were off of it. But the thought process and all the formations and everything that Mike Shanahan did was kind of the first ones to do it. And I just, you know, I felt like a genius going on the air because Mike was really cool as a head coach. He would tell you what he's going to do.
Right.
He'd get on the blackboard and draw plays up.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, man, that's awesome. Wish I could do it. You know, it was really cool, but it's just followed down. And it's still the key to winning in the NFL.
Yes.
Two things. One, run the ball. All the reasons we know. I'm not going to bore anybody. But it makes your offensive line tough.
Yes.
And if they're tough, you got a tough football team.
Yeah, because then your defense has to practice against it, and they become tougher. And yes, go on.
Yes, yeah. And you see all the other things. Yeah, they'll call. Oh, if you run it, you can throw a play action pass. Hey, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
You know, that's another one I love. But the big thing is that tell me a team that's gone and won the Super Bowl with an average offensive line.
Yeah, no, it's...
You don't have to think long. I can't think of any.
No,
last year...
The only one I could think of would be the Denver Broncos of 2015, maybe a little bit. Not a great offensive line. Good. They stayed patient with
the
run. But their defense was out of this world special, so they could overcome it.
The defense was special, and Peyton Manning, of course, the quarterback, and then what really saved that offensive line that year and everything was the defense and the fact that Peyton Manning and Adam Gase still there?
Let's see, Gase? No, I think he was gone that year.
No,
he was
gone.
Kubiak all the way there.
Well, whatever. It's just all the screenplays, get rid of the football and all that thing really protected that offensive line. But that's a great example. I forgot that one.
Yeah, that's all right. That's what I'm here for. But either way, the run game, phenomenal. And listen, this wasn't like, just from my notes, it wasn't like, oh, my gosh, the Browns are getting totally blown off the ball. They are just getting totally cremated, like, physically. No, this was more schematic cremation. I mean, this was Kyle Shanahan going against the guy Steve Wilks, who has had some success against him even last year when he was the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. First play of the game, that was just a total run design, just to screw over Steve Wilks and his defense, just a lot of examples like that. But the running game's so creative. I think that's the big thing that jumps out to me. We've yet to really see what Jimmy G is all about at this point. We really have.
Yeah, because great point.
He's just managing games at this point because they're able to run the football and do the things necessary to win games.
Well, you know, that's true. He did not play a good game, I thought. I thought he was very average in the throws, everything about it. You know, I just go, God, please just step into one and let it go. So that doesn't happen, so I don't know. But the one thing they're doing, they're running it great and all that, but they do keep the quarterback involved, and they keep him, you know, in rhythm.
Yes.
And so when the time comes, they have to throw it 35 and 40 times because of the situation, or they just can't run against maybe a couple of these defensive fronts in the NFL.
Right.
Their quarterback is ready then to bail him out because they're going to call upon him. And since you've given him enough work in games like against Cleveland, that he's – if he's called upon, I think he'll be able to do the job. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too.
And you know, I'm trying to think back to week one. I didn't watch that as close as I should have when they played Tampa, where Tampa was all over them.
Yeah, and it was shaky with a few splattered plays of goodness in between here and there.
Right,
right.
Right.
So I know that's really, I think, for the 49ers offense, it's my biggest question going forward. Not that it's a huge question, but yes, like you said, when they do play that defense that can finally slow down their run game, will he be able to carry the squad if he has to throw it 35, 40 times?
Yeah, you know, the last thing I want to say, too,
coaching
is so important in the NFL. You're saying it with everything you're saying today. I tell people this all the time. You know, don't just point to the quarterback. The quarterback is at the mercy of the coordinator and the head coach and all that with the personnel, but the scheme that they run.
Right.
And the scheme is just as important. It's more important than the skill of the quarterback.
Yeah.
And just case in point, there's the 49ers, and I watched them, and I see – you know, Booger McFarland just bragging about Weston Richburg, pulling around the outside to get the block, and I'm going, he wasn't good enough to play in New York, but he can play out there on that good offensive line now.
That's you know, right,
so,
right.
So don't tell me about, oh, this and that. You got to know where to put players in the right position,
right.
No matter what position they play, offensive line, quarterback, running back, for them to have success. And they've done that out in San Francisco. Mike McGlinchey, who you covered at Notre Dame.
Yep.
I mean, man, some of these rookie tackles are coming in the NFL. Usually it's a horrible process their rookie year. Him, Colton Miller with the Raiders, I think they're both second-year guys. Is that right?
Yeah, you're right.
Well, they both played well, I thought, as rookies, and they're both playing well as second-year tackles too.
Okay, so, all right. Here, I mean, the last thing, and I got a question for you. We got some questions from Twitter that I want to hit you with. And first off, I mean, hey, I love the 49ers, and I know you do. I formations, two tight end sets, three tight end sets, you know, two backs, one tight end, all of that stuff. It's old-school football. I love that. Now, you just said it. We talked about Jimmy G. Okay, so here's one. Despite being 4-0, and this is from Mark Cisneros, I hope I got that right, where does Jimmy G rank among the QBs who has a winning record? Okay, all right. So that's a deep question. And I don't, but, yeah, I mean, okay, where does Jimmy G rank? Let's just be quick with that. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not Dak Prescott. He's not Russell Wilson. He's not Matt Stafford. He's not Tom Brady. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Deshaun Watson.
Is he Kirk Cousins?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins I think Kirk Cousins is as good an athlete, and you know, quite honestly, you know, not knocking Jimmy G, I think Kirk Cousins has a better arm and is a better thrower than he is.
I would agree with that too. Right. So I think both of our answers would be he'd be towards the bottom of the list as far as the teams with the winning record in football. I mean, he would. I mean,
as of now, it's still, you know, look,
it's so
I know
early, right?
Yeah, his injury, that was a big deal. Practice is a big deal. He couldn't. I don't know how much he really practiced during the preseason. I think he was practicing. I know he didn't play that much, but you know, it takes a while. You know it, and you know, you watch guys. If you're coming back from injury, it's a slow process. So we'll give him a few games, and like you say, we'll get some answers when they have to throw it to win.
Well, yeah. @Coco Butterlove wants us to talk about Jimmy G because I don't know what I'm looking for. LOL. But he seemed so inaccurate. I'll make one comment about the inaccuracy, and I don't know if you've seen it, seen enough to know either. He has got the whole step in a bucket thing going big time.
Yes.
I mean, if you're standing on a clock for all those out there and he wants to throw the ball at 11 o'clock, okay, he steps at 8 o'clock sometimes to throw the ball at 11 o'clock, and that is going to relate to inaccurate and throws that don't have enough power and steam on it. That was my big issue with Jimmy G to this point.
Yeah, no question. The ball does lack power, and you're not going to get power the way he's throwing, and everything you're describing is exactly what he does. Basically, it's you know, throwing, falling backwards, to make it really simple. That's what it is. And, of course, he's very good at dropping his arm and throwing around people. But when you do that, you're going to drop your arm. You can't do that with your body and think you're going to make a high release, which doesn't matter, which is really an overrated thing in the NFL.
Right.
But he has perfected falling a little back and losing power on the football because of that. Is that the injury? No, that's really how I've seen him throw almost always as a starting quarterback in the NFL every single game. It's a little more pronounced right now, but hopefully he'll get out of that. And I'm sure the 49ers are saying, hey, come on, just step forward and let it go. And because I ask receivers all the time, I work with two at Showtime, Brandon Marshall and Steve Smith, and I ask them all the time, can the quarterback basically throw it too hard if he's throwing spirals? And they just go, no.
Right.
And it's always the same thing. Get it to me. I want it. and let me go.
Yeah, we've never heard anybody complain about Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre throwing the ball too hard. Why?
No.
Because they threw perfect spirals every time, like you're saying.
Yeah, they do. And generally, somebody can throw it really hard, like we're talking about.
Yeah.
They're going to throw perfect spirals because it takes mechanics to really just let it go.
Right.
And so, again, there it is. He threw some balls that you wouldn't like going, get there. One over the middle in particular that I forgot who made the catch right off his shoe tops and never broke stride, which was pretty incredible. I think it was probably in the first quarter of the game. And but, yeah, he's got to correct that to, like we say, when his time comes, he'll be ready.
Yep. All right. Let's go on to the Raiders and Bears, okay? Let's go over to the London
game. Great game. Oh, my gosh.
Great game. Right? I mean, let's talk about Bears D, Raiders O, okay? I mean, if I just had to break it down, I would just say this. First off, the Raiders kicked the shit out of the Bears defensive front seven. That's all there really is to say about it. The Raiders front is big. It's gigantic. It's physical. When you just talk about Trent Brown, Rodney Hudson, Incognito, Denzel Good filling in for Gabe Jackson, he's 320 or 30 pounds. And then you just talked about Colton Miller, their first-round pick from 2018 draft. So right off the bat, that's the strength of the Raiders football team. John Gruden is playing through that strength. And I haven't seen a whole lot of teams push around the Bears' defensive line the way they got pushed around in that game. But my film breakdown in general, and then you just tell me what you think off of this, would be more of this. Patience with the run game by Gruden. I give him a lot of credit for that. He always has a few little wrinkles within the run game to keep a team honest, whether it's a creative toss crack, whatever it may be. But then he's just staying patient with that run game. Two or three play action passes a game off of one of those type of runs, a bootleg, and then really short, high percentage drop back pass game. He's playing to the strengths and limiting the weaknesses of their team right now, which I think is brilliant, and I got to give John a lot of credit. And they really had a great game plan and really controlled that game versus the Bears. That score is misleading. They dominated the game more than 24-21 late victory.
Yes. They dominated the game. It was almost like, you want to look at the tape or watch the game and go, well, the Bears are just not into it. That's what you want to say.
Yes.
But really, what you're seeing is the reality. They were just getting whooped up front. And when that happens, yeah, it's demoralizing.
Right.
And, you know, how do you even know it? I had defensive linemen sometimes say to our offensive line, damn, are we that bad? And, you know, but that's the way it was. Khalil Mack was a non-factor in the game. In the run, I think he had pressure maybe once or twice. I can't really remember, but I just kept going, wow, they are handling him. And I look at Colton Miller, who's 6'9", over 300 pounds, playing left tackle, and they get in their stances. I look over and I see 77 getting his stance, and he makes Colton Miller, Trent Brown that is, makes him look small.
Right.
And the size and the power. And, you know, I've said this, and, you know, John Gruden, we all think about, oh, he's going to trick it up. And no, it's old, like you say, old school.
Yep.
He's going to run it, be physical, keep his quarterback in good situations, and all the things you said are right. Derek Carr is athletic enough. He's accurate. He's throwing the ball well, so he's not missing many chances. If they're open, he's hitting them. And if it's not there, he can move and make it happen. So it's a great formula right now that they got going. The wide receivers, when I look at them at wide receiver, I think, oh, they're okay.
Right.
But it's not about them.
No, it's not. And that's why they're playing the way they are. I'm glad you brought that up. Go ahead. Keep going. Sorry.
Well, I just think that's it. That they built, hey, Mike Mayock, you know, you sit back and John Gruden's out of the game all this time. And then what was one of the first things I said? If your offensive line is not up to it, then your whole team stinks. It's just you can't – it's unbelievable. The first person you hire when you become a head coach, you make sure you go, oh, I can get this offensive line coach. He'll take care of everything. Now I'll get somebody to design some of the pass plays or whatever and do it that way. That's how important the offensive line is. We overlook it, and we judge quarterbacks that play behind awful offensive lines, and then we give too much credit to ones that are playing behind the great offensive lines and put up good numbers. But, which is always frustrating doing this job, but that's the way it is, and we live with it. But very impressed with what you said and Josh Jacobs. So they knew what they wanted to do during the offseason, Christopher.
Right.
So they draft the guy that fit the mold.
Yep.
Josh Jacobs, nothing fancy except see it, run it, hit it.
Right.
And it's pretty cool to watch.
It is pretty cool. And you said about the receivers. Hey, there's no Tyrell Williams there right now. He's injured. Of course, they lost Antonio Brown. That was going to be a big part of their offense. Where they've made up for it is these three tight end sets. 83 Waller, 87 Moreau, 85 Carrier. I'll give Gruden a lot of credit. He's been getting them on the field. And because they're all athletic, they can put you in a bind with, ooh, it's power run game. Ooh, they're spread out on this play. What do we do? We're in our base defense, and now we got linebackers covering tight ends who are pretty good pass catchers. I think that's another interesting aspect overall. Okay, I got to
– bring up a great point.
Right.
Just being very general,
yeah.
I see more double tight ends and three tight ends. There's
yes.
Frank Reich that came from Philadelphia.
Yes.
He's coming out in three tight ends all the time.
A lot. No doubt.
And it's a bag of everything. Run it, counters, screens, play actions. And then I always say, I haven't watched the Colts offense yet against Kansas City, but every time I watch the Indianapolis Colts, and I'm not exaggerating, every time I go, wow, that is something I don't think I've seen so far on the offensive side of the NFL.
Yeah.
Either a formation where they run something out of, or a concept that I go, why, how do you stop that? And it's really cool. And, of course, that's what he's doing. He's making his, he's got talent, but he's making them better with the scheme, too.
All right, so I got a question from Twitter, at Kauai808, K-A-U-A-I. Sorry if I say that wrong. Wants to know, how much credit does Tom Cable get for the success of the Raiders' offensive line?
Well, I think I'm going to give him credit. He had a rough time up in Seattle.
Yep.
But I think he's with the perfect guy and John Gruden.
Yep.
They got a relationship, all that. They,
right.
And the biggest thing of all, they probably went out and got the kind of players. When you look at this line, they're not beautiful, that's for sure. They're about power and size and all that.
And meanness and being nasty,
yeah.
Right.
And Richie Incognito, you know, I'm not going to go on the story of Miami, which I think as time goes on, we realize really what went on down there. But
yeah.
But he brings a toughness that you every line needs at least.
Yeah, they need that. They need that asshole on their line.
They need. Okay, I was gonna let you say it instead
yeah,
of me.
Good.
Yeah, if you get two of them,
right.
Now you're cooking, and it rubs off. It does.
Yes.
You know that every locker room needs a couple guys. An offensive line needs one. The defense needs two, and the you know all this. You need those kind of guys on your football team to keep the. They give you energy. They give you a little edge, and no matter what's going on, it's a fight. Hey, guys, we don't win or lose. We're going to keep fighting. We're going to, and for real, let's just go out there and fight.
Right.
And that's what offensive linemen do.
Yep.
And you empower them when they, when they know they got a running back behind them like the Raiders. And I say this, I think it empowers offensive linemen when they know the running back, if we give him a chance, that he'll hit it.
Yep.
And make something out of it. They just go, let's go.
Yeah.
And
yeah, hey, I'm with you.
It's their turn to beat up on the defensive lineman instead of sitting back pass blocking and getting their ass tore up by these guys running at them.
Yeah, that's right. And, hey, listen, this is other things we got to point out. I mean, the Raiders, early in the fourth quarter, threw a screen pass to Trevor Davis. He fumbled on the one-yard line going
into
score,
line,
right?
Yes.
So there's that. Of course, they gave the Bears the short field. Josh Jacobs, who thought he was going to get a handoff from Derek Carr, but it should have been a toss play. I know the play that was coming. It was 99 Philly, of course, because I know Gruden's offense. So that fumble that they gave the Bears the short drive for their first touchdown of the game, that was a mistake by Josh Jacobs. So really, the Raiders dominated the football game. One last question for this side of the ball. At Kerry0078 would like to know how you stop or slow down a great pass rusher like Khalil Mack and like the Raiders did on Sunday.
Mentioned
some of it. I mean, to me, they didn't really have to stop him because they didn't make it a drop back pass game. They constantly made Khalil Mack worry about the run. Oh, gosh, here it comes downhill. Oh, here's a boot, but I'm still having to worry about the run because it looks like a run fake. Oh, now it's a boot, so you don't get the pass rush that way. Oh, it's a play action fake. I'm worried about the run. Then I'm trying to restart and do the play action fake. And then they put tight ends over them, too, to just shorten that edge. I would say those are the biggest things I saw from this game plan to slow down a guy like Khalil Mack.
Well, yeah, you hit them all. You hit them all.
Yeah.
Formations. Running the football, keeping him off balance, knowing he just can't get down in that stance and throw his rear end high up in the air and take off. Right. He knew he couldn't do that. He had very few opportunities to do it. And there's nothing like, you and I talked about this one, maybe this past offseason, that when you look at college tackles, quit looking for great athletes.
Right.
Look for guys that can anchor and stop the power rush.
Yes.
Almost, probably to me, I'll go high, 80% of all sacks are power.
Right.
Because I can't let him get around the edge. And then they end up running you over. Even right. smaller pass rushers can run over these giants.
Right.
So get guys that can anchor, got strength. And just think, he's going against Trent Brown and Colton Miller, who's 6'9". Trent Brown's a giant. If Trent Brown puts his hand on you, you're done.
Right.
And Colton Miller, you beat him. He's still tall and long, so he could still probably get to you and at least help you go behind the quarterback or whatever. So having guys at tackle with great size, you got to remember, Khalil Mack is really a linebacker slash defensive end.
Exactly right.
So
yes.
he's not going to be able to, you know, that's leverage. There's a lot of things to that, that when he meets certain matchups, it's not going to be in his favor.
Yeah, that's right. He's not just going to overpower a guy like Trent Brown all game long.
No, there's
position.
No way.
Yeah,
you can't.
No way.
I laugh. I watch him, and it's like, have you watched Orlando Brown with the Baltimore Ravens?
Sure.
Hell, he doesn't get out of his stance sometime. He just stands there and sticks his right arm out, and it just, they don't move because he's 340 or 50 pounds.
All right. So let's switch it over, okay?
All right.
Bears O, Raiders D. All right. I'm going to say this about the Raiders D. The Raiders D, well-coached. They play hard. They have some under-the-radar, really good players. One of them is a guy you mentioned to me on the phone last week, Max Crosby, doing a great job on the defensive line.
Yep.
You know, they're P.J. Hall at defensive tackle, Haskins, Hankins, that used to play on the Giants.
Right.
He's doing really well. You know, the secondary, sneaky good. Gary and Conley having a good second year after a rough rookie year. They got two safeties in LaMarcus Joyner and Carl Joseph, who are safety-slash-nickel-corner hybrids, so they can do different things with them. So that would be my breakdown of just what I see from the Raiders. They're not reinventing the wheel. I don't sit here and go, oh, my gosh, what great talent. But they're well-coached, and they play hard, and they got some young up-and-comers that I like.
Well,
let's just go into this, though, now. The Bears offense.
Yes.
What the fuck is it? Okay. I don't know what they're trying to get accomplished.
Well, you and I have argued about this. Not argued. We've talked about this. What is your calling card?
What is your calling card? There is no calling card. There's no dedication to the run game. The offensive line's not playing good. And I think the offensive line is not out
should
of this.
Be good.
This should
the
be
offensive
better than
line
what it
should
is.
Be way above average. It should be, if we ranked them from 1 to 32, at worst it should be like 12 to 14, somewhere in there.
I agreed. But you're right. Right now they probably look like they're the 18th to 22nd. Why? Because there is no bread and butter to their offense. And they look like a team that doesn't really practice the run game or put a whole lot into it as far as schematics on a week-to-week basis. So those are some of my issues altogether with the offense of the Chicago Bears, let alone they're predictable with some of their pass patterns and what they do formationally. And then you add on top of it, I don't care if this was the full scope of the offense or not, okay? Because we've heard that from Matt Nagy. Well, if this was the full scope, it's not that good either. And that's concerning to me, let alone Chase Daniel is, you know, got issues as far as physical talent is concerned at the quarterback position.
Well, yeah, we're sitting in the studio when Trubisky got hurt, and it's the talk is, and they actually do a few things and look okay. It's against the Minnesota Vikings. And everybody, well, yeah, and I'm, you know, some people just go, well, he can run the whole offense and this and that. And I just go, yeah, the Bears defense completely dominates the Minnesota Vikings. It's unbelievable how much they dominate. And you put up a whopping 16. Yeah, you really,
Right.
And that kind of shut some people up. And then, of course, this game, whatever. But you're right. All those things you say about the Bears' offense, not sure about their wide receiver talent. I can't judge it because I just don't see enough. But let me say this about the Raiders' defense.
Yeah.
I kind of talked them up last year because I liked Maurice Hurst, Arden Key, and the other P.J. Hall. I can't remember. I remember his name. All of them. But they were all picked last year as defensive linemen.
Yep.
And I think they've all kind of come through.
Right.
Maybe not stars, but tough kids, and you talked about Max Crosby.
Right.
When I saw him in Hard Knocks, what did you think? I said, man, they brought this kid on just because he is he's an a-hole.
Right.
And he just is going to do whatever it takes. Oh, I broke my hand, bro, but I don't think I'll miss but a day.
Right.
Is that when he broke his hand?
Yeah, it is. It was the preseason game.
Yeah, right.
So he played in that game. He went in and got it taped up and kept playing. Right.
And, you know, because Gruden, when I think it was right, they have Gruden during the game. He goes, oh, whatever. And Max Crosby comes out, I'll be okay. I'm going to play. And, you know, Gruden was like, I could almost see it like, that's what I want to see. You know, but it's cool. I really haven't studied Cleveland Farrell just to really get a great feel for him.
Yep, he didn't play this week anyways because he was out with a concussion, so don't worry.
Good, because I haven't watched that side of the ball yet,
right.
So I'm going to watch that later today. But you're right about their secondary. I do like their safeties a lot. And I'm Garyon Conley, it's his third year, I think.
You're
playing.
Right, it is his third.
Yeah, yep. It just seems like it's his second year because he's never been out there enough.
Right.
But very talented, loved him coming out from Ohio State, so... The big thing is, what are we saying about the Oakland Raiders?
They are physical and they play hard.
They play hard and they're making it a fist fight,
which is pretty
cool.
That's right. That is pretty cool. I don't know what to say about the Bears offense. I don't know if it's going to fix itself because of what we talked about. I do find it very predictable. Even when I just look at their schemes, passing the ball, it's everything over the middle. There's no deep shots down the field. There's no really throws outside the numbers. You can play areas against the Bears offense and be fine. And I really think that's what the Raiders did. They were looking up crossers and deep crossers because they knew it was coming somehow, some way. And that speaks to the predictability of that offense to a degree. And Chase Daniels, two interceptions, they were horrible. There's no other way I can put it. You know, for the guy that's supposed to be the smart guy and can run the offense and knows it like the back of his hand, and he's an extension for Matt Nagy, okay, that's great. But I think, once again, for the second year in a row, it's shown to me that the offense is better with Mitchell Trubisky because at least he can create something with his legs and make an occasional big throw down the field because he does have a pretty good arm.
Well, yeah, you're saying all that. He's big, he's strong, he can run, all that. It doesn't matter. The narrative is out there. It will not change, and I don't know what will change it. Even if he won a playoff game this year, Mitchell Trubisky, people are still going to say the same things about him, and, you know, it's out there. And the Bears, it's the Bears' fault. You know, most teams try to prop up their young quarterback in the first-round pick, but the Bears decided to go the other way.
Yes,
you know, well,
right.
we're working with him, and we're going to get him. So I've been over you and I have been over this many times, and I don't get it, and it was a terrible narrative right from the start, and it's backfired on. Now the whole national media, as soon as you say Trubisky, oh, he stinks. Yeah, I know. You know a lot about the football. I'm going to take your word for it, my man. That's right.
Yeah, well, I mean.
You read it in the paper, so you think it's real.
Well, why? Okay, we got a guy, Crick, has asked, why does the offense not have an identity? I mean, why is that? Okay, I mean, what would be your assessment of why no identity?
Well, I think any identity for the offense, it's got to be one thing. First and foremost, our offensive line has got to be the man.
Right.
And then it starts back from what we started the day with. So, like I said, I think their offensive line, Jordan Howard was running behind it and did pretty well.
Right.
And I thought, oh, and I really kind of thought this year they would get back to being a little more physical up front and running the football. That has not happened. So now there's nothing. Now you've lost all elements of surprise, and you're trying to do it with formations and quick passes and screens and all that. Those things don't work unless we have something to build from.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know it's the era of the spread offense. It's all about college football. Yeah, okay. Yeah, oh, yeah, they're copying college football.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, okay, let's see, the 49ers, oh, that's right, 49ers, Raiders, oh, that's right, oh, New England, oh, let's just keep moving on. All the good offenses seem to do one thing.
Green Bay, Dallas, Seattle, you go through with the Rams, they're all run first,
but
downhill.
But they're wrong. We got to get the college concepts in there.
Right. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Yes. I know.
The blitzers, don't worry about them. We'll get rid of the ball. Yeah.
All right.
Now I know why you're such a jerk.
Yes.
Because you got it from me.
Exactly right.
Okay.
Exactly right. So the
answer to the question is it's a great question. Then if you're going to make it all about everything, then just go for it.
Right.
Be more creative. Throw the damn ball every play. And instead of running it, throw a screen or a bubble or whatever. Make that your running game.
Yep.
Be great at that.
Right.
But that's hard to do too. Yeah. You know, it's hard to make it work on a consistent basis.
Yeah, so you're right. Right now they're doing half of nothing. It's a little this, little that, and they're, you know, masters of none, or, you know, whatever I'm trying to say. All right, we're going to move on to the next game.
You're close, somewhere near. I like listening to you every morning when you try to give these phrases and you go to Mike Florio. Did I say that right?
Yeah, it's 50-50. All right, let's talk some Kirk Cousins, okay? Vikings, okay. O, Giants D. People wanted to know the answers. Oh, was the Vikings offense fixed? You know, they look so much better. Of course, Dalvin Cook runs for 132 yards. Kirk Cousins has a great day, 22 of 27 for 306 yards. I think he threw for like 260 in the first half, okay? Here would be my assessment of the game, okay? And then you can go off of it. First off, the Giants' defense is not good. Everybody out there needs to know that. The secondary's right. Not good. The linebackers aren't good. They can't really rush the passer. The only thing they got really going for them is the three big guys in the middle. So after that, now you talk about the Vikings, what they did. I don't think their offense is fixed by any stretch of the imagination. I think they took advantage, from what I saw on film, of an over-aggressive front. And really, when you look, and I don't think you watched this film yet, but I know you saw it on TV, most of the big completions of the day were bootlegs. It was fake to Dalvin Cook, you know, going left, Kirk Cousins roll right, and he either threw to a guy coming across, more times than not, he threw the crosser coming across about 12 to 15 yards down the field, and he was wide open because the Giants were worried about Dalvin Cook in the run game, and the linebackers would fast flow over there, and then there was nobody there to stop the crossers off the bootleg pass. I don't sit here and go, oh, man, the Vikings' offensive woes are fixed. No, there still needs to be more of the drop back pass O game, but if they have bootlegs and play actions and can run the ball and continue to find ways to creatively run the football, then maybe that formula can work. I don't know. What do you think?
I think you're right. It's easy to sit back and, you know, as I said to Tom Moore when he was coordinating the Indianapolis Colts once, they'd lost the game, and I saw him the following week. I said, Tom, do you go home at night and kind of go over the game and think, wow, I should have called this and that? And he goes, Phil, I don't know what philosophy he quoted. He goes, we're all geniuses after the fact. And it, so that's, I want to start there. But yes, all that play action stuff is there because the Giants were really worried about the run game.
Right.
Now the Chicago Bears, just to go by, so they stop it. And now all that stuff is not there for them.
Right.
And the problem I have with it is they weren't ready for that. In other words, did you think you were going to go in there to Dalvin Cook just had that unbelievable game? Was that against the Raiders?
It was.
Okay. When he had that game, did you think that not that the Chicago Bears, who we talk about, their front is not going to be ready for the run? Right. So they tried running it, and they got nothing, and now they go, well, now what do we do? Well, see, you got to know as an organized team especially, and I learned this from Bill Parcells, we would run it, and all of a sudden we'd go to practice on Wednesday, and by God, it's throw.
Right.
And because why? Because I know they're going to do everything they can to stop our run. So, and our linemen are going to have a little trouble. I don't like some of our matchups. So we got to throw it and then just sneak a run in here every now and then to keep it balanced.
Right.
And that's my problem with Minnesota. Why they didn't have the alternate game plan ready for Chicago was very confusing to me. And the Giant game will give them confidence. I think, you know, we know the wide receivers are good. They got a good tight end combination going on.
Yep.
The offensive line is better than it has. It's sure better than last year.
Definitely.
That's for sure.
Definitely.
And Kirk Cousins can move and throw. So, you know, never, you know, I kind of laughed. I guess I made even a good point. Not a good point. I laughed about the fact that I think they threw it 10 times against the Raiders.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You can't do that. That's what we've already talked about it. You've got to keep the quarterback involved at all times.
Right. Well, it was 10 throws, I think, week one against the Atlanta Falcons, and then not a lot more throws against the Raiders either.
Was it the Atlanta game?
I'm pretty sure, but either way, it wasn't a lot of throws in either game. I'll tell you right now because I got it right here.
I think you're wrong, but
we'll
just
see. So the Raiders game, he was 15 of 21.
Okay, so I was wrong.
No,
boy.
It's all right. Don't worry. It happens. You know, sometimes your son's smarter than you. It can happen. It's okay. And then in the Atlanta game, he was 8 for 10 for 98 yards.
But
your point either way is that you never want the quarterback throwing it for less than 15 times a game just because it can get you out of rhythm. You feel like you're not a part of the game, and that can filter into the next week.
No question. Yeah. Listen, when you say 15, really, you never want him to throw less than 20.
Yes,
so if,
right.
if you're sitting in the game, there's a certain point. If you haven't thrown it, that means you're wearing the other team's ass out.
Yep.
So go ahead and give him some fake throws, you know, screens, boots, whatever. Let me throw a quick out just to be part of it. And it's hey, we talked about teams. Kyle ran the ball great in his game. Shanahan, the 49ers, the Oakland Raiders ran the ball great, but their quarterbacks were always involved. They never go too long and get into those ruts where it's, well, it's 3rd and 7.
Right.
Get it done.
Right.
You know, hey, that's why I used to pick up for Dak Prescott. They'd run. It's 3rd and 6. Now we judge him off of all these third down play passes he has to throw.
Right.
When that's the toughest thing to do. Yeah. A real accomplished veteran quarterback can do it because he's not going to be as affected by it. But any young guys, that will get them off, off their rhythm.
Right.
Tom Brady could do it. Why could he do it? Because they have 150 third down plays they can run.
Right.
And he could, okay, we can run, and he doesn't have to drop back and read. They're going to do something to get the guy wide open. He can just catch it and throw it. And,
yep.
Oh, Tom Brady's great on third downs. Of course he is, because he's been doing it for 20 years, and they've built up this group of plays that they don't have to worry about really keeping him in that rhythm because they know they can find completion.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so that's the big takeaway. So like we said, I mean, basically what we're saying with the Vikings, because that was really the theme of the game, they used boots and play actions and then screens to kind of then set up their run game going forward. But I think you and I are both saying the same thing. They need to find even more and more ways to do those things for the games like they'd had 2 weeks ago against the Bears. When the run game does not work, they got to do things to keep defenses honest. Very important for them on that side of the ball.
You know what you say,
yeah,
too? But
right.
What I found watching it is that as much as they dominated – the Giants actually had chances. Like, God, as the Giants score here, they're in the game.
Yeah, right. I know.
And, you know, that was a little scary, too. You're just dominating. Kirk Cousins threw for 260 yards. I remember looking at it. We come to our halftime, and I got my computer, and I go, damn, Kirk Cousins, he's on pace to throw for over 500.
Yeah.
And I looked at that, and, you know, and I just – so, and the fact that the Giants hit the ball a couple times, and I thought if they score, this is going to turn into a game. And the crowd and the offense for the Vikings, when that thing turns, it will make you tight as a player and everything. And you know that.
Sure.
Even as a coach, now can you continue to push to go ahead and win the game? It was interesting watching Green Bay. They kind of ran into that scenario against the Dallas Cowboys, and they were able to hold on and just keep that last play from happening where it just really becomes so emotional that sometimes it can overcome you, especially when you're on the road.
Yeah, no doubt. And the defense, they had one of the biggest plays of the game. Minnesota was driving. Dalvin Cook caught a screen, got fumbled, stripped by Jabril Peppers from behind, who's
right.
been playing really awesome in the run game, Jabril Peppers. He's a guy I give some flack for about his coverage skills at times. But run game, man, does he throw his body around. Well, after he caused that fumble, that set up the safety where the Vikings got the Giants in their own end zone. And really, that turned the game. It went from 13-7 to 15-7, and then of course the Vikings got the ball. They kicked a field goal before the half to go in 18-7, and it made things very tough on the Giants from there on out. All right, I got to do a read real quick. The Peter King podcast, okay? This week, he has Brett Favre at 50 years old. They talk about Patrick Mahomes. They talk about getting yelled at by Mike Holmgren and the insight into Andy Reid teaching Brett Favre how to watch film as a young player in the NFL. So that should be cool. Peter, come on. He's got a great relationship with Brett Favre. That should be pretty awesome. Check that out. Peter King podcast.
Good read.
If you had any advice for Sam Darnold, the 22-year-old second-year quarterback of the New York Jets, if he was sitting here right now, what would you say to Sam, career advice?
I would say, not only to Sam, but I think about this often. For any young, whether he's high draft pick, or no draft, but a guy who is playing or on the verge of playing as a young player. I remember Andy Reid telling me one time when he became my coach, and this really kind of kick-started. He said, I can teach you in 5 minutes what you probably couldn't get in 3 or 4 hours. Think, I'll buy that. What is it? He said, you know, when you watch film, you end up, like most people, you're watching a game. And that's true. Like, oh, did you see that tackle? And that's okay, but he said, one guy usually will tip off to you what everyone's doing. And he's right. You know, sometimes it's a little harder to find that key, but if you know what you're looking for and how to look for it. And so I would tell Sam, find that key. Become an 18-year veteran now.
All right. There's a little snippet of the Peter King podcast.
Yeah, that's pretty good, you know. There's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
You know what? I know it.
Yeah.
There's something that always gives you a key, and the longer you keep studying and the more you play, the easier it is to find it, the more it sticks out, and it gets to a point in your life, it's laughable. You go, oh, so they're trying to disguise it. Oh, you know, I mean, you make the call, you know, whatever. It's really, I always say this. By first year, it's one thing. By year, whatever, let's say, I don't know what year it was. We'll just say 10. By year 10, if the safety lined up 1 yard closer than he was supposed to, I could walk up the line of scrimmage, it was like a red light going off. I go, uh-oh, look at that, got him. That means this, it means that, and here we go. So it was really those things. And I played for a coach in Ron Earhart.
Right.
Who was really an innovator of many things in the NFL that still a lot of these offenses you talk about with up in New England and around the league are still carry the same principles he had back in the 70s and 80s. And he would always find a little something. I want you to look at this. Don't tell anybody. And when this guy does this, that means, you know, it could be the stance. It could be the way the safety stood. It was, I just go, damn. And his nickname was Fargo because he coached at North Dakota State. Fargo, how'd you notice that? He goes, hey, I don't know what. He just goes, hell, I've been looking at film for 50 years. So these things are easy for me to see. So he'd always have a checklist of little keys to look for in a game to tell you what they were going to do.
So he was your guy that took your film preparation and studying the game to the next level, Ron Earhart, though?
Oh, yeah, no question.
And
no
then,
question.
What year, Dad, do you think it was to where you got to the line of scrimmage and you were like, damn, I know what's going on? I mean, what year in your career was that?
Well, I think there was it was interesting. I had injuries which set me back and all that. But I would say year five or six, it just became, now it was fun to watch film, to learn all these things and really be able to take it on the field and use your knowledge to help you perform better. So,
right.
You know, if I was in today's game, I would have that down by year three.
Yeah.
You know, just because there's just more learning, more teaching, more knowledge from guys and you know.
You get a head start in high school and college where those
kids
are at now.
Yeah, that's right, too. High school and college. I mean, I don't remember ever reading one defense in college.
Right.
I just ran and threw it. I don't remember ever reading the coverage and say, oh, it's too deep or this, that.
Right.
Nothing. Just it was so elementary, it's laughable when you think about it.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing how far the game's come. Okay, all right, let's go to the next one. And I think you've watched some of this one, at least on film. I don't mean to say you haven't watched them. I know you've watched all of them.
No, I haven't watched them all. It's Wednesday. I mean, I'm...
Well, no. I mean, just watched as far as you like to watch the condensed game sometimes. You do a lot of things like that.
Well, if it's a no game that I know I'm not going to talk about, it's condensed.
Right.
I'll just watch it, get a feel, look at the stats, do whatever. And then there might be a couple where I might even listen to the broadcast a little bit because I want to see the whole field and on a big screen. But I try to watch as many on coaches' tape. And, you know, today's a big day. I'm ripping through it, not as fast as I want. Tomorrow's huge. I do it on Fridays all day till about 5. Fridays is a day I'm still catching up. But by Friday night, I like to be done. I like to know what I'm going to say on Sunday, or at least have the thoughts there as we hit certain issues or topics. And, you know, then I just keep talking to myself for about a full day and a half before we go on the air.
Right.
And then you go on the air, which you know.
Yep.
All of a sudden, I'm going to say yes and no, and then you go, oh, damn, I got to change everything now. And it's last second. But the good thing is when you do this, and you and I both are the kind of the same, when you watch all the games, hey, I just go, oh, well, I got 15 things here. I just have to pick one of those 15 I want to talk about.
Right.
So that's what's great about it. So.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So let's talk Texans O, Falcons
yes.
D. Okay.
I tried reading your notes because I did watch the Texans O.
Yep.
And Atlanta's D. And I'm gonna have to get, it was hard.
Yeah, get the microscope out, okay? But
I got reading glasses on. Let's see, I got the Cowboys there. Damn, it's really amazing how small you're right.
Well, yeah, and remember on your computer because I emailed them to you. You can make it bigger. You got to figure out how to do that.
Oh,
okay?
I can do that. Okay, yeah. Good point. Go ahead. But what are you gonna say about the Texans, though?
Well, I'm gonna say this. I guess first off. Some good play design by the Texans offense. I give
yes.
Billy O'Brien credit. I don't ever sit there and go, ooh, their run game design is special or anything like that, but he always stays patient with the run game, so he's never going to just let a team just tee off completely and not have to worry about that. I think the big thing is, more than anything, though, the Falcons' defense is just plain horrible. I don't know any other way to say it. I mean, there's just... I don't believe it's to be well coached. I think there's things there that I look at. Of course, they've had some injuries, and I don't, and again, there's some talent issues there. Jonathan Cyprian, DeMonte Kazee, and they're in the secondary. They have no chance of covering certain people in certain situations. I don't care whatever happens to them. They have no idea. It's the second year in a row we've seen this Atlanta D. If they get one or two injuries, they just fall apart.
First off, listen. So then you're not going to succeed.
Right.
Because people are going to get hurt.
Right.
And building a team, you want great players, but you got to have great depth.
Yeah.
And so you got to make a choice. So you're going to pay five guys everything, or do you want 15 good players or whatever? But I understand. So I'm not even going to bring up the injury thing. I don't usually bring it up about any teams. Maybe an offensive lineman here and there, because that's part of the game. And part of who you are and everything as a coach and an organization is about having that next guy ready at all times.
Right, right. That's right. So I look at that game in general and just go, gosh, Texans aggressive in the pass game. They were certainly there to push the ball down the field. I mean, some of the mistakes Atlanta made, gosh, whether it's the first touchdown pass where it's cover two to the right side and he throws the little out route to Will Fuller for the touchdown. I don't know what the cover two corner is worried about. There's nothing in the flat, just back up. Okay, I look at that as coaching. You saw the real deep crosser to Will Fuller for the second touchdown pass,
yes.
Right? It's a three-man rush. There's eight guys in coverage, and they got six guys covering nobody. And then there's one guy wide open down the field and two guys on DeAndre Hopkins. So, not only aggressive play design, but just in general, some really, really bad defense. And I kind of wrote this down. I mean, there's just no details to the Atlanta D. There's no contain on Deshaun Watson. I mean, this just in, he can run and escape the pocket, but let's not worry about containing him. So you got a bad defense coupled with a QB who is awesome and was hot. The Texans were aggressive in the pass game, and which is proper versus the Atlanta Falcons. And I guess my only thing I would say about the Houston Texans, just my one issue with them in general, I wish they would get underneath the center a little bit more and have a little diversity in the run game and the play action pass. But all in all, I like the game plan, and I do think Houston is raring into form on the offensive side of the ball if they can just find that other consistent weapon other than DeAndre Hopkins in the pass game.
Well, I think we saw, and I think one of the things I took out of the game, a couple, that Will Fuller can be the other guy.
Yes.
And he looks lightning fast. Sometimes I had to look, of course, the hair is a giveaway, but he looked like Hopkins almost to me a few times.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I've always liked this Kiki QT.
Yes.
I've always liked him. I've never understood why. Maybe it's injury from last year. Was he hurt? I don't know why. But I've always liked him. And listen, the big thing to me, one, everything you said about Atlanta's defense, there was, I don't even know what to say. There was nothing there. Breaking of rules, coverage.
Yes.
No consistent pass rush, whatever.
Right.
But I go to this with Houston.
Yeah.
Their offensive line is absolutely starting to get it together.
It is.
And, we don't have to say that anymore. If Deshaun Watson gets sacked five times, and I'm going to bet you four of them are his fault.
Right.
Because Laremy Tunsil, he played well.
Yeah.
They got two high draft picks in there. Nick Martin's at center.
Right.
Come on. He's a player. So we got a mobile quarterback. What else do you want as far as now for protection? You've got a big time, maybe definitely top five wide receiver in the NFL. So they got everything they need to make this work. And I do too, wish they'd get under center and just get a little more there. But listen, it's about Deshaun Watson.
Yep.
And I'm sure Bill O'Brien's going, this is what he wants to do. This is where he feels comfortable. Probably doesn't like turning his back to the defense. But I'd say, man, get over it. Because turning your back to the defense, trust me, the defense freezes when you turn your back.
Definitely.
So, but a lot of good things. I like the rhythm of the play calling.
Right.
There were so many easy throws, and there were throws that could have been there he didn't take. But really tough in this respect. I went away, and I was really impressed. I wrote down a lot of nice things about the Houston offense, but I just always went, it was Atlanta's defense.
Exactly. I know, and that's why I got to see more to be able to prove or to be – I think the big thing is, you said it, the O-line is going in the right direction with Titus Howard, the Sharping kid who they drafted in the second or third round. I can't remember. Their only issue is at right guard with Zach Fulton. I worry about him.
Hey, look. No. No. When you say that what we said, it's okay. You know, you're not going to have five blocks of granite in front of you. So you need two for sure.
Right.
And then we need one that wants to be. And then you got to pick up for the other two. So, I mean, they're pretty solid there at four positions in that offensive line.
Yeah.
And I think the center and left tackle are big time, for sure. Now, the two rookies look pretty good. I watched them pretty close and all that. So, now you sound like you're running the Giants. You know, oh, we only got six good offensive linemen. By God, we need one more because, you know, that's how an offensive line is. If you get a couple good players – the other one's just got to hang in there.
Right.
It'll work. So.
All right. So if you had to be more encouraged by one offense, the Vikings offense or the Texans offense?
Texans.
The Texans would be the one.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I do wish they'd find a little more short completions, easy ways for him to get the ball out of his hands sometimes. Because like you said, a lot of the times the play design is for a more aggressive type throw. And Mr. Watson can't help himself, and he doesn't want to let that play die ever. And a lot of the times they get sacked, it is because of him holding the ball, waiting forever. He's fearless that way, and, of course, a lot of great things happen, and that's some of the bad. I wish they would just find a little bit more of a short passing game to maybe help them out in that regard.
Well, you're right. I will say this, though. Deshaun Watson, no sacks.
Yeah.
He took no big hits, and that's what I kind of judge everything on. So that was really good. He tried to take a big hit. He tried a couple times. They got away where he didn't by holding on the ball and moving so much. And I think it was just he moved up the pocket once, fumbled the ball, bounced up to him. He kept running and completed a pass. I went, oh, man, it's your day. When that happened, it's just it's your day. But I was encouraged with that fact, and that's a good point. I haven't thought about it, but you're right. There's not enough. Like, catch the ball and throw it and get 6 and 7 yards sometimes.
Right, right.
And which they can do. But here's the bad thing. Well, go ahead. We just want to talk about Texans offense, so I'll let it go with that.
That's okay. Yeah, that's it. All right. Let's switch it. We're going to switch to the next game. We'll go Ravens Steelers, okay?
Well, tell me this.
Yes.
What'd you think? Give me a quick assessment. We won't take but a minute.
Yeah, that's okay.
What'd you think of the Texans defense?
Oh, okay. So I didn't watch it on film, but I worry about the Texans' defense. I worry about their secondary. I think it's a little unsound at times, what they do on that defensive side of the ball. And, you know, that's okay. They've gotten away with it the last 2 years, but that's when they had Jadeveon Clowney on that front. And they don't have him right now. Whitney Merciless is good, but not great. J.J. Watt, again, is, you know, still really, really good, but is he the game wrecker he was 2, 3, 4 years ago? No, he's not. So I do worry about that aspect of the Texans' defense.
I'll say this.
Yeah.
He is, if he had a partner in crime, he would probably still be somewhat of a game wrecker.
Right.
He's close a lot.
Yeah.
He beats his guy on a consistent basis, but there's no help to help him get there.
Right.
So they just go, well, let me get out of his way, and there's nobody else there. So they lack speed in the front seven without question.
Yeah.
And here's the thing that really got me as I was watching it, because I'm watching them, going to watch them very close and have, because they're going to play the Kansas City Chiefs this week, and we'll talk about that. But they play off coverage. So Kansas City is fast.
Yeah.
So they're going to give all these receivers running starts.
Right.
Running starts, and you're going to be in a backpedal, and here they come. Now, what do? You bail and start sprinting, or do you try to cover him? And the one thing, you didn't see it last night, but on Showtime, we did some stuff about the Kansas City offense, and I thought Steve Smith was very good.
I saw it, you jerk. Oh. I watched the show.
Oh, you did? Okay, yes. I'm sorry. Yes. I know you're busy. I wasn't being smart. And damn, you called me a jerk. but that's okay. I get called worse than that every day. But the Steve Smith made a great point. The Tyreek Hill is the route runner
right.
of the group,
right.
which we don't think of. And he goes, they just run to spots across the field.
Yes,
here.
They do.
And, you know, I just went, wow, I know that, but I've never said it or made that assessment.
Right.
And what you saw was the Colts defense just kept their head down and ran with them.
Yep.
And they were all over them, basically, the whole game.
Right.
And then one time, I don't know which receiver it was, because I'm not going to go back and look, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff to go over. But they did have the backside receiver. It's probably going to be a touchdown. And Mahomes has it. He gets hit. Arm gets hit. The ball falls way short. You don't see it on TV.
Oh, yeah. He's going to run like a little – he ran like a fake crosser corner route,
yes.
I believe.
Right. Yes.
Yes.
He's gone.
Right.
I mean, I'm not sure which
receiver
it was.
Third quarter. I can't remember for sure either. I want to say it's Mecole Hardman, but I know the exact play you're talking about.
Yeah, he was gone. It was a great, and that they do that every now. That's their change up to just burying their head down and running.
But Go ahead.
My point is that worked, and Indianapolis did it because they saw Detroit do it
right.
and have success. And then why does Detroit do it? Well, Matt Patricia comes from where?
Yeah, New England.
New England.
He knows New England.
They did it.
Right.
Now, will that all change? Can you do that when Tyreek Hill comes back and Sammy Watkins was missing too?
Yeah.
Well, it's going to change,
right.
but you can't change it too much.
Right.
Because I did all the numbers, you know, and I didn't know this. But when they played zone Indianapolis, you know what happened?
They got
nothing
towards.
Good.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. It was.
Right.
I think it was 100%.
Yeah.
So they
I don't think they played zone again after he scrambled and threw the touchdown on the zone coverage. I don't know if they played zone again the rest of the night.
Yeah, they might have a couple times.
Maybe,
They did another time on 3rd and 16, and he picked up 15, and that's when they missed it on 4th down, I think, something like that.
Right.
You know, so many times in a game. But, yeah, they did play a couple other times, and they always paid for it. And even the zone they played on the touchdown throw to Pringle. They're all in perfect position.
Right.
But what happens, which I say to young quarterbacks, even though they're playing this great cup, they got it. When you move, they're going to move too. And that's what happened. Kansas City had everybody just blanketed, but Mahomes broke the pocket, and all of a sudden they all went, oh, wow, and then they start running the wrong way. And that's why he got that great touchdown throw.
Yep. All right. So let's go Ravens Steelers, all right?
All right.
Ravens O, Steelers D. Okay. Lamar played well. I didn't look at the film and go, oh, gosh, Lamar really had a horrible day. Okay. He threw 3 interceptions. I would argue, you know, really 2 of them weren't his fault. The first one was pass interference, clearly. I don't know how it wasn't called, really. Over the middle, he's throwing a ball to Andrews. And
right.
Minkah Fitzpatrick hits him. As the ball is just left Lamar Jackson's hand, he hits him. That gets intercepted. Okay, so there's that. He has the interception of the seam route, again, to, I think, Mark Andrews one more time. Throws a really good ball into tight coverage. Andrews has to kind of turn his body and lift his hands up to catch it. Has the ball in both hands, but then loses it. Ball pops in the air. Devin Bush catches it.
Right.
And it got reviewed. So, all in all, it wasn't a bad game by Lamar Jackson. I think the big thing is that I looked at more than anything, the Ravens, okay, we know they're going to run the ball. Lamar Jackson can do some special things running the football as well. They had a good game plan. That Steelers defensive front is still special, and they're game wreckers. They really are, and they can keep them in football games. Now, my problem more than anything, is the Steelers and what they do in the secondary. They have issues there. They get caught in matchups that, you know, Devin Bush should not be covering Willie Snead on a 20-yard out route down the field. Or Bud Dupree shouldn't be running with Hollywood Brown on a seam route down the middle of the field. Those are things that bother me about the Steelers' defense. I don't know if I sit here and think the Ravens' offense is special. I know their all-line is big. I like that aspect of it. I do think they're a little bit lumbering when it comes to, like, pulling guards and doing things like that. They're not necessarily great. They have hard times with the athletic front, like the Pittsburgh Steelers. It gave them some issues. But all in all, you know, I think the game was a little bit misleading. I think Baltimore controlled the game more than 26-23 overtime victory. And I have no real big concerns about a Lamar Jackson. We're doing this game because people were wondering what happened. Why didn't the Ravens win by more? All of those things. This was a lot of the questions we got through social media, and people wanted me to check in on Lamar Jackson and what he did on the offensive side of the ball. And that was kind of my quick assessment of that.
Well, that's a game I watched in the studio, and I think I really haven't watched it a lot, but just watching what I have and a quick watch is I thought what you're talking about, the interception,
yeah,
it could have been a pass interference, but he still should have never thrown the ball.
Yes, he should have.
Because you
got to
know what's tight and where you are in the field and all those things.
Good point, no doubt about it.
And it's really the first time all year. Well, he's thrown some other ones. It would be like, oh, maybe. But his decision-making has really been tremendous, and I've raved about it many times. His control of the football overall for the whole year has been great.
Yes.
And, you know, not quite as sharp throwing the ball against the Steelers. I don't know what the weather was that day. I can't remember. I don't think it was windy or too much or anything like that. But, you know, their defensive front, you said it. The Steelers are a very confusing team.
Yep.
We're finding many things out. But first, we're talking about the Ravens. But the Steelers, when you lose stars, all of a sudden, some of the other people don't look as good.
Right.
And I think we all know what we're talking about. And it's hard to make the analogy. But when you make that jump from number two to number one, it's a big one.
Right.
As Bill Cowher once, he made a great statement. I've told you this many times. He goes, it's one thing to get to the championship game, but it's an entirely new world to win a Super Bowl. And it's that big of a jump. And it's you could almost say that about backup quarterbacks, number two receivers to number one, not having a big-time top five maybe running back in your backfield.
Yeah.
And so now we've taken this good offensive line, and we really kind of rendered it whatever.
Right.
And, of course, we lost our quarterback too. But – I just don't know what to think of the Baltimore Ravens as far as the defense. They need speed.
Yeah, that's the issue. All right, so I have a question. At Carrie0078 says, what happened to the Ravens defense that has clearly regressed? That is point number one. Gohan, you're right. They are slow. They are slow on the front seven. Tony Jefferson now hurt is going to make them slow at safety. But continue with your point.
Well, what was my point? Yes, the Ravens definitely are slow on the defensive side.
Right.
I think Earl Thomas, he was a tremendous player at one time. I'm not calling him slow, but Earl Thomas was the sneakiest safety right up there with Ed Reed we've ever watched.
Yes.
He could be on one side of the field and break up the pass on the other side of the field.
Right.
Because he knew what? What did he? What made him so fast? Because he knew what the quarterback was looking at.
Right.
He knew where the weak spot of the defense was, and he covered it up. That's why those – just one reason why that Seattle defense was so great. The one play that I can remember like it was yesterday, they're playing New England. You remember the big hit on Gronkowski going up the middle on the seam?
Right.
I don't know if it knocked Gronkowski out or not. Earl Thomas was lined up to the whole other side, but he positioned his feet to read it. And, you know, I was watching film up here, watching it, and, you know, who was here was Matt. And Matt goes, well, you know what they're doing here, don't you? I said, no. What are they doing? He goes, Earl Thomas has positioned his body to drop, to read the quarterback. He knew there was a weakness. And so as soon as Brady turned his head, Earl Thomas took out, went all the way over there and hit the ball, Gronkowski and everything at the same time. It was really unbelievable play. And I go, wow, he did this on purpose, huh? He goes, yes, that's what he does. He lines up to do his job, but he's always looking out for the weakness of the defense. because he knows the quarterback, whatever, reads it from there, and it worked out great. So my point being, it's not working for the Baltimore Ravens. And again, just no threat of a speed pass rusher. Who's their speed guy? Parnell McPhee?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we don't know. Yes, there is no speed guy. I mean, he's a power guy more than that.
Yeah, he's a power guy. I mean, right. that really hurts him. And the cover guys are, Jimmy Smith, he is out, right?
He's out still, yeah. Right. Marlon Humphrey's phenomenal. Brandon Carr's still good.
He's still a good player.
Yeah, right.
But you know what they need is, the rumors will fly, and you heard the rumor about Von Miller, and, they're 0-4 the Denver Broncos, and, of course, they're not going to let him go.
Right.
I thought, well, if they do, there are going to be some bidders, and one of those bidders would probably have been the Baltimore Ravens.
That would make a lot of sense. Definitely.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. One guy can change everything.
Right. Well, and you talked about with the Steelers. I mean, you lose stars. Well, yeah, hey, the Ravens lost C.J. Mosley in the middle of that defense, too. He's a star, and that's
hurt
their team.
Oh, he was a star. I didn't realize how good he was.
Right.
I knew he was good, but I am not just saying this. When I saw him in the Jets, and especially in I've only got to see
about
three quarters or a half or whatever.
Yeah, but he was everywhere.
He was – and he looked like a giant.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe it's because he wasn't around all the
Giants on the Ravens.
On Baltimore.
Yeah.
But he was tremendous. So, yes, you middle linebacker, you need guys to cover up and make all the plays. That's why Carolina can do so many things on defense. They got Shaq Thompson and Luke Kuechly, who both can play big, but they both can play very fast.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what they do for their football team, those two.
Right.
I mean, between the two of them, they're going to set a record for a combination of linebackers making tackles in a year. But, again, real simple for the Baltimore Ravens, lack of speed, and their offense needs to continue to push and to keep their defense in good situation.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't look – their defense, I still think it's a really good defense. I still think it'll have a lot of dominant efforts. And as we're talking about the Ravens defense just from this past week, I mean, I think they let up I think they let up 269 yards of total offense. Okay. So played well. I get that. But it is against a Pittsburgh offense that's in Strugglesville itself. And it's really, when we talk about the Ravens defense, we're talking about it matching up against the elite offenses of the AFC and everything like that. And I think that's where we think they're going to have problems with that lack of speed and everything like that.
Yeah, that's true. They played a good game against the Chiefs. That was interesting. And their power, right now, now New England, their offensive line's a little beat up and stuff like that. So you look at it maybe a little differently going, well, the offensive lines, they're going to go up against some offensive lines like Philadelphia. They're just power. And maybe Philadelphia has a little more speed up front, but man, when they can overpower you, then look out. They can just run you over, which they have. They did the Jets. They ran over the Green Bay Packers on both sides of the ball. And it kind of comes back to that. You're right. Once we get down and as the season winds down, it's all about matchups a lot of times.
Yeah, right.
And so, the Ravens, interesting. Love following them. I love what they've done. It's pretty amazing. They've changed their football team. I like the fact that Lamar's playing well. Now I want to see more.
Yeah, right.
Okay, we caught everybody by surprise a little.
Yep.
Now let's see if you can continue it and build upon it and still be as dynamic as they were the first 3 weeks.
Yeah, definitely. It needs to be more in the run game, the pass game, all of it. Yeah, you're right. They caught people by surprise, and, of course, it helps when you get to play the Dolphins and the Cardinals the first 2 weeks.
Well, and two, listen, the running backs. They've got guys that they're going to take, you got Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards. Look, they're not shrinking violence. They're going to tear it up in there.
Yeah.
And so that kind of matches everything. We got Lamar for speed. I think I read that in your notes, maybe.
Yes, I did.
Lamar's the speed threat.
He's the only guy on the edge that you're worried about on that run game. Everybody
That's
else
enough,
is between
though.
The tackles and power, yes.
He's always in shotgun,
right.
Just about. So it's going to be there. And the other two, are doing a pretty good job. Mark Ingram's still a good player.
He is.
And he really fits a role, that's for sure.
Definitely. All right, let's go Broncos-Chargers, okay? And specifically just Chargers offense versus Broncos D. Here's some things that just jumped out to me about the game, first off. Chargers O-line is not impressive. They are not good at run blocking. It's like they've gotten away with it. They got some good athletes up front that got good feet, but there's just no power in the run game. And they have issues with the power pass rush as well. You know, hey, stats can lie. You and I talk about this all the time. You know, the Denver Broncos came away in this game with zero sacks. They were around Phillip Rivers the whole game. Von Miller had zero sacks. I don't care. He was the best defensive player on the field with his two tackles. He was phenomenal. Run game, pass game. He was everywhere. I'm telling you, Phillip Rivers knew where he was.
But, oh, absolutely.
Yes. But so my some of my takes from the Chargers offense, okay? You know, first off, yeah, people want to know, why did the Chargers offense struggle? Why is it struggling in general? Well, they have not been able to run the ball the same. But part of the reason they struggled last week, too, is their defense to a degree. I mean, they had the ball for six plays, and they got the ball back for a third time, and they were down 14-0. So that's not always easy for an offense to continue to stick with their game plan or routine when you get thrown in the hole like that right off the bat. But I thought the Broncos, defense is still talented, well-coached. They made the Chargers throw the ball underneath. That was the thing that jumped out to me. They weren't going to let the famous, you know, Phillip Rivers 20-yard in cut, 20-yard crossing route. They weren't going to let any of that happen. They took that aspect of the Chargers offense away and really made him stay patient, wait for underneath routes, and really a lot of times the pressure made him throw the ball underneath and led to some ugly offensive numbers by the Chargers in general.
Well, let me say this.
Yeah.
You're right on all fronts. You're the Los Angeles Chargers.
Yeah.
You're playing against Denver. Okay. When you talk about Vic Fangio, he is, I can imagine he probably has three keys to his defense. It's what I used to hear from, who used to tell me this? Oh, man, I can't think of it right, a defensive coordinator. Oh, Dick LeBeau.
Yeah.
There's three keys to playing good defense. Don't get beat deep, don't get beat deep, and don't get beat deep. And that's what they do. So Vic Fangio has kind of played that way. And as I've watched them this year, I wrote my notes. I haven't had a chance to really, we haven't talked about the Chargers. I mean, the Broncos on TV hardly.
Right.
But they play a lot of soft coverage. That's what he did in Chicago because of the great front seven.
Yep.
So people are not throwing it down the field, but everybody's trying to run the ball and having some success.
Yeah.
And the Chargers, you know, they didn't do it.
They didn't want to
line up and just go at it.
That's where I was going with next. I don't get it. Did they not watch the film of the week before against the Jacksonville Jaguars and how Leonard Fournette ran for 7,000 yards in the game? I just couldn't believe that the Chargers got down 14-0 and panicked and then just went into, oh, we got to throw the ball every play from here on out. And that's basically what they did. I just shocked that an Anthony Lynn team would do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, Ken Whisenhunt is the coordinator, and, you know, I don't know, I always wonder about that when you're the head coach. What can you do? Can you just say, you know, coach, let's don't forget about this or whatever. But, Phillip Rivers is the let's fall back on it. Just let him throw it, and he'll bring us back. But
right.
It's tough to do. You're worried about, like you said, and just watching it on TV, you can see Phillip Rivers – as he dropped, he caught the ball. He was always thinking, "Where's on? I'm going to throw the ball."
He definitely was.
Yeah, he definitely was, and rightly so. Who wants to get, you know, rear-ended by Von Miller, you know,
yeah,
and get run over?
Right.
So he was thinking about that, and the fact it didn't run the football. I'll tell you, it's hard to get the Broncos to come up and get out of that safe pass coverage.
Yes, they will play two safeties. They call your bluff. They will not put extra people in the box.
Which is fine. And
right.
I agree with that to a degree.
Right.
But here's the problem.
Yeah.
The margin of error for the Broncos is so slim, it's incredible.
Right.
The offense is, the offense is what it is. What's the talent of the offense? Quarterback's good, solid, no question,
yeah.
Joe Flacco. Phillip Lindsay, I like him.
Yeah.
I like the running back situation. I'm kind of surprised at how good Emmanuel Sanders has come back from injury.
He looks great.
But there's not much to it.
I'm
just trying to be kind. They got a first-time rookie, Scangarella.
Yep.
I said that right, I think.
Yep, Scangarella.
You know, I know
yep.
he comes from San Francisco, but – you know, he's not going to be Kyle Shanahan in year one of his career
right.
being a coordinator.
Right.
So it's just, again, they could be 3-2, whatever. They could be 4-1, but they're sitting there. And as I'm watching the game, I'm going, damn, you know, I just use the clock a little more. Do these things. You know, towards the end of the game, in the fourth quarter, they got the lead, and they're snapping the ball, and I think you kind of argued against me a little, too quick. You know, bleed the clock. Try to take one possession out of the game.
Right.
And once you're up 17 to nothing, it's about managing the game now.
Yeah.
It's not about scoring 30. It's about managing the game to win. And I did not think they did a great job with that. That was – honestly, that was one of my biggest takeaways of the game.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, it was a game where they really dominated the game, and there we were looking up in the fourth quarter going, damn, it's 17-10, and they might lose this.
I swear to you, I said, oh, my God, they're going to lose again.
I mean,
Vic Fangio's not going to sleep for a month. I mean, he's going, what do I got to do to win a game? So, you know, I don't – you know, we all like to say we don't root, but we do root. And I just said, oh, let him win a game. Come on, let's go.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy, he's paid his dues in the NFL. He's a great person. He never promoted himself ever. You know, he was just one of those. I've seen Vic Fangio. I've told you this. I remember when he was Mr. Blitz'em to death from everywhere. And just, it was awesome to do their games because they'd either get really burned or it really worked their way.
Right.
And that was what, when he was with the Indianapolis Colts early in his career, and then Tony Dungy came in and said, no, we're going to play the opposite. We got great pass rushers now.
Right.
And they played soft coverage and played a whole different style to change their football team. But he's done it every way. That tells me what he is and who he is. He's a coach. As the old saying goes, he can teach a round and he can teach a plat, and he can do that.
Yeah, definitely. So what's your overall thoughts on the Chargers right now? I worry about the Chargers. I don't know what they are.
We're seeing a rerun. I just put the reel up, and it's like the movie, let's watch it for the fifth time.
Right.
Let's watch it for the tenth time.
Yeah.
It's 10 years in a row. It seems like it's the same thing. And as I watch them, I just don't see where it's going to happen, where they can be a big factor. Can they sneak into the playoffs? That's one thing. Are they going to win it? No, they're not.
Yeah.
They're not. And you know, I try to watch. I haven't seen your boy from Notre Dame, Tillery. I kind of thought he would really solidify a lot of things in their team, but I haven't paid that much attention. It's hard to just watch one guy.
He's not there yet, though. No, he's playing, but he's not there yet. And I would say I wouldn't – he's got the talent. I think he is a guy that needs a year or two to get used to life in the NFL. I don't think he's the kind of alpha that just comes in and dominates.
What have I always told you?
Right.
There's two places where it takes time to get used to.
Yeah.
Quarterback and interior defensive line.
Right.
Because the NFL is not college where we have one blocking scheme and we do nothing.
Right.
And in NFL, the D tackle's in there where he is. He's inside and he's going, holy Christ, I'm getting hit from everywhere. And, you know, you think you got it, and then you get ear hold from the other side and all these things. You get double teamed, like really double teamed.
Right.
Who was I watching? The Green Bay Packers. They were doing the double team in the inside, and they weren't even worried about the damn linebackers blocking them. And their running back, you know, he was just flying up in there and getting yards because don't worry about coming off and getting the linebacker. Just push the lineman back. And, you know,
yeah,
so Jerry Tillery is
the right cut, right?
Yeah, he'll make the cut, and if nothing else, he'll smash it in there for 4 yards. Whatever. That's why I always kind of give interior defensive linemen a break, is because I know Bill Parcells kind of taught me all these things. I never forget them. That he goes, you know, Sims, it's tough in there.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, as you start thinking about it, I go, yeah, I guess it is. It is totally different game for defensive interior linemen when they come to the NFL.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Chargers. I have a lot of people asking me about the Chargers, and I'm just going to give my one assessment, and we're going to get done with this podcast.
Okay.
You miss Russell Okung, okay? He's not a left tackle. They got issues. They have a left guard problem. Whether it's Feeney or Lamp, there's an issue there, okay? It rises every game I've watched, and it's pretty consistent.
Give me this real quick. Yeah. How has Lamp played when he's in there?
Not very good.
That's a big disappointment. Second-round draft pick, and I've been looking for him and everything. And why the fact that he hasn't broken into the lineup in 3 years was worrying me early this year.
No doubt. So you have that, okay? Melvin Gordon. Yeah. Hey, listen, I know they got good running backs. Melvin Gordon's still better than all of them, okay? So you just getting him back into form. The tight end, Hunter Henry, he's banged up. He's not playing, let alone Antonio Gates isn't on the field anymore. So it's the offensive side of the ball. Then the defensive side of the ball. The best player on their defense, arguably, Derwin James, is out for the year. They have another great safety from last year, and Jahlil Adai, who I know we both like,
yep.
He's not on the team anymore.
He's in Houston now?
Yes, I think he is in Houston. You're exactly right. So he's there. Okay, so they miss him. Melvin Ingram's hurt right now. He's not playing. You know, one of their corners, Mike Davis, just getting back in the lineup. So they have issues across the board, let alone I don't think their defense has ever been deep enough or big enough in the interior part of their team. And those would be my issues with the Chargers for all those out there going, what's wrong with the Chargers? They were one of the best teams in the AFC last year. What's going on this year? Well, those are some pretty big things we just mentioned.
Well, yeah, and you know, and I know he didn't get the ball as much as he probably liked. Tyrell Williams is not there either.
Thank you very much. Exactly right. Yes.
So, you know, last year I used to laugh. I said, what a receiving corps he has to throw to. But that's changing, and you're right. The guys are missing on defense. You know, I forgot about Mike Davis. Jahlil Adai, I loved him. Oh, he's, you know.
Yeah, he's one of your favorites. I know.
He's been one of my favorites for years.
Right.
Just, you know, and I forgot. Who'd they get rid of? Oh, well, that's why they got rid of, he's playing for the Rams now with the Baltimore.
He's playing for the Rams now? Eric Weddle.
Kept going, why would they get rid of Eric Weddle? And then I remember going, well, they're going to put Jahlil Adai in there as the guy. And I think that's the reason why they got rid of him would have been him.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
just guessing.
That and money and age and all of
that. Yeah, no, but they knew they had somebody at the same level
to
go ahead and make that move.
Right.
So, you know, that's always, you know, I go through things and go, why is this guy here? Why did the Dolphins let Laremy Tunsil go? What would be the reason? You know, you have a great left tackle, and, oh, we're going to rebuild the team. But, damn, you can't rebuild everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. So I didn't look into the money. I usually don't look into the money. I just go, I know he's a pretty good player. Left tackles, you know, you draft him, sometimes it doesn't work. You know what you got, but, you know, that's a whole other story, too.
Yep. All right. We're done, okay? I can't talk anymore.
Whew.
You are the man for coming on, Dad. I appreciate it.
Short notice, calls me out of nowhere. I'm trying to work. Hey, Dad, can you do the whole podcast? No. First, can you come on for a few minutes? Sure, I'll do that. And then I get this text. Oh, yeah, sure. My life's not important. Let's take care of my son.
That's right. Thank you very much. That's what dads are for.
It was a lot of fun.
All right, good
talk. I wish I was a little more up on some of the teams like you are, but I'll catch up and I'll call you on Saturday and tell you what you don't know.
Don't worry. It's all good. And you were plenty up on all the teams, and you add a lot of insight in all these conversations. You the man, Dad. Love you
so
much.
You have a great day.
Yeah, you too. I'll talk
to
you. Okay. All right, that's it for Chris Sims Unbuttoned. I was about an hour and 40-something minutes of football talk, so I hope you like football if you're listening to this podcast. You know where to find me, at Sims Unbuttoned on Instagram, at CSimsQB on Twitter. All right, everybody, got the Thursday podcast. Will be the PFT-PM collaboration with Chris Sims Unbuttoned. We will do picks. I did okay in my picks last week. I didn't do great with my bets. I'm pissed off, but hopefully I did better than Florio. All right, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the Deep Dive Wednesday podcast. Peace out. See you, homies.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.